I am the Reality Changer. It is May the 16th, 2013, year of our Lord. And this is normally Black Dwarf Star Thursday, but my man's gone. He's down. He said he might have a problem because he's going back to the Ozarks. And he's issued a warning. Tomorrow's the 17th. Supposed to be the crossing. You know, I guess he's heading for the Ozarks. I guess that's what that deal is. Now, I think that Sheldon Day is going to call in. I hope he does, because I'm kind of caught a little flat-footed. I got my cards here. Sheldon Day's joined me. I don't know if I'll keep going with this or not, but that is the big cover-up in the UFO community about invoking Yahweh's name, Jesus' name. They all know it, but they cover it up and don't say anything. How would that work? All right, how does that work? It's supposed to be Black Star Thursday. Again, Terrell is traveling from Florida to Arkansas because he thinks that this thing is going to come through. He's sticking with his May 17th date, and he put an alert out. I guess I could go grab his YouTube thing and go through that 15 minutes or so and let you hear from him that way. He puts it out on Thursday, right? He did it Wednesday. But I do have Sheldon Day here. And in Sheldon, you got a website too, and you got a deal. Why don't you give that, and then I'll kind of suspend a little while finishing this tape off. I don't know if the people in the chat room really want me to go through it. I can go through the interview. It's probably about another 20 minutes. Take your vote in chat. Let's see what happens. But anyway, Sheldon, what's your website? And you got any update? I know you needed a telescope or something, right?
Oh, thanks for inviting me back, Hijacker. Yeah, my website is thelightofdayradioshow.com, and there's a Planet X logo on the top there. If you click on that, that redirects you to another subpage that I have. Probably one of the best Planet X webpage anywhere on the internet. And I haven't heard from Terrell on my. Yeah, I know he was en route to the Ozarks. He's probably getting ready to hunker down in the caves there tonight as we speak. You said he's going to be on tomorrow night.
Sorry, muted. Tomorrow night? No. Tomorrow night's going to be Robert Pepino.
Well, anyway, as far as Earth changes go, there is a major update for this week. It may tie in with Terrell's Black Star Earth Crossing event scheduled for tomorrow. We have an uptake in activity at the Mount Popo volcano down in Mexico. They're on like a level 5 of a 7 level alert level there. They have like a 7-mile radius restriction around the volcano. Then we had a tremendous surge in solar activity here within about 2 days ago. We may actually have a pending plasma cloud or a CME coming in from the sun here tomorrow due to an X-class flare eruption that happened yesterday. We actually had at least 4 or 5 X-class flares leash off of sunspot 1748 about 2 to 3 days ago here. Maybe tied in with the black star aligning with Earth. I'm not sure on that.
We had actually 4 X-class flares. and now the sun's pointing directly at us. So, and then you're right about the earthquakes. Also, a super volcano opened up off the coast of Alaska, and a volcano went off in Alaska, and also one in Russia, and I think one in Central America, or might be South America, and then Italy. So it's been a lot of volcano activity.
I wasn't even really aware of the other ones. Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
And then, I also had a plea to put out to your audience. I dropped this in your instant messaging on Skype before. There's a lady out there named Denise Goforth. She alerted the public that about 7 to 8 months ago, she had access to some type of automated or robotic telescope, and she wanted to see what was going on some of the outer planets in our solar system, and she discovered that Saturn and Jupiter had undergone a pole shift about 7 to 8 months ago. So if there's anybody out there that has access to a telescope or has a friend that can maybe confirm this for us, if that is indeed the case, because if that's true, of course, there's only two planets left for pole shift as this thing comes our way, and that would be Mars, and then we would be next for it.
Uh-huh, well, so what are you saying she needs?
Well, she had put out a YouTube video. It's on her Facebook page. Her name is Denise Chavez Goforth, and she has images there that she took through a telescope that shows Saturn and Jupiter had undergone a pole shift.
Oh, really? If you can put that link either in Revolution Radio's Freedom Slips chat room and or Skype, make sure everybody gets to see that, because if that's true, that's undeniable proof that Terrell 03, he's got it right, and that this thing is right on us.
Well, like I said, this happened 7-8 months ago, but you know that, yeah, it could tie in with his information most definitely. I'll work on that link while you're finishing your audio there, if you want.
Yeah, because we're actually going to get into the Lucifer telescope in just a couple of minutes, and he does a pretty good technical breakdown how it got named, and I thought of you when I thought of that. So yeah, let me pick that back up, and well, I'll just pick it up where it's at so nobody misses it. But in a couple of minutes, they go to the Lucifer telescope in Arizona. And they give a breakdown and who actually owns it, why it was called that, what it does, that type of thing. So here we go. Let me just check with Sheldon here. Sheldon, were you able to pull that clip of the pole shift?
Yeah, I dropped it in your Skype here and in
the chat room. I'm not that. Let's see.
And can I bring something up while you're checking that out?
Yeah, sure.
And often the, let's see, it would be the western horizon here in my backyard. I can see the Kitt Peak Solar Observatory on top of a mountain range. And as you know, the government's moving a lot of operations to Colorado. Well, some people might have forgot that back in late 2011, they
were... I'll tell you what, hold that thought, Sheldon, because we're coming up to a break, and we'll be back in 4 or 5 minutes, and then you can repick your story up fresh. And then we can go on. So hang on, everybody. Okay, welcome back, folks. You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. This is the 200th edition of Changing Reality, the Most Important Things. If it's Thursday, it's Black Dwarf Star Friday, Thursday. And Terrell 03 has joined us, but before I jump to him, I'm not going to play any more of this interview. Unless he leaves or something like that, I can finish. But if you want to finish up that interview, just go to YouTube and type in alert, the Alien Antichrist False Prophet Update, one of two with Sid Roth, and you should be able to pull it right up. So we're going to do more traditional, but Sheldon wanted to mention that. Remember, we're listening supported, so help the station out. Now, Sheldon, what's your website? And what did you want to say before I jump to Terrell for an update?
Well, my website is thelightofdayradioshow.com, thelightofdayradioshow.com, and there's a Planet X logo on the top folks can click on to go learn more. I heard during the break there that you guys actually have Clay Douglas on this network. He lives here in Tucson where I live, and he invited me to speak at one of his conferences just on the topic of Planet X, and from what I understand, he was one of the first radio talk show hosts openly talking about Planet X back in the mid-90s. What I wanted to finish up talking about is, you know, you've been playing this clip talking about the Lucifer telescope. Well, in my backyard towards the western horizon, we have the National Solar Observatory on top of Kitt Peak. Well, most folks might have forgot this, but remember they were moving the the federal government was moving a lot of operations to Colorado. Well, back at the end of 2011, I learned that the Kitt Peak Observatory was going to be moving their operations to campus up in Boulder. There's going to be an annual payroll there of about $20 million. So this was announced back in October 2011, the relocation of there's two solar observatories, one on top of, somewhere in New Mexico, Sacramento Peak, and the other one, Kitt Peak here, west of Tucson. So I thought that might have been interesting for folks to note as well.
Yeah, I didn't know that at all, that's for sure. And so you're saying they're moving the whole observatory from one state to the next?
It says in the article here that they were consolidating operations.
Well, it would make sense because Colorado's mountains are, they're real high up. So maybe they're just getting a better position. I don't think it's because of height, but yeah, that's pretty good. So, well, just ride shotgun with us and Sheldon, okay? Let's see what Terrell's got to say.
Sure.
Okay, Terrell, how you doing? You know, I got your YouTube and your update. You might want to tell people where they can get that, but why don't you give us the update? And are you on the road right now driving on a cell phone or what?
No, I'm here. Oh, you need to test the mic. This is not my primary system. I'm on a backup.
Oh, no, you sound great. Are you in Ozarks?
Yes. Okay. I left at 6 o'clock this morning, and this is how long it takes. This is about the same distance if you're in London going to your safe zone on the Pyrenees, on the Spain side of the Pyrenees. Just about the same amount of time. So I used to live in London. I have friends over there, and they complain, oh, you know, you're lucky you have a safe zone and all that. They've got a safe zone there, too. It's a 2,000-foot high plateau, Spain. If you look at the scallion maps, it's still there. But you want to be on the Spain side. You don't want to have to travel through the Pyrenees Mountains after the events. You want to be on the Spain side. That's where civilization is going to kick off for the Europeans. The you know, if you look at his map, you'll see that they have big problems over there. Because of the giant caldera, you notice that they just discovered that Yellowstone is 50% larger than they thought. The one over there they're going to discover is a lot larger, many times larger than what they think. And that's the reason the scallion map looks like it does. All of Northern Europe is gone. After some event, I don't know if it's this event, but whenever I look at the scallion map, the Navy map of the future, the Casey maps, and kind of compare them, then this is what the world would look like after a geological pole shift, after several of them, and after the calderas burst.
Yeah, and I wanted you to comment on the pole flips of Jupiter and Saturn. Did you hear about that?
I heard about that previously. Is that from Sheldon's sources?
Right, yeah.
It was also Uranus, wasn't it? It was another planet, too. What was the third planet, Sheldon?
It was Neptune, but that was harder to confirm.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote back about that. I think I included that in the newsletter, too. What they're suggesting is impossible unless you have multiple inbound objects. Because Neptune and Jupiter and Saturn, they were in tripod position around the sun. So, you know, like perfectly. You know, like you set up, you know, a tripod, three sides. So the reach of the sun, the influence of the sun magnetically is what's holding these planets upwards. And possibly a dark star, if it gets close enough, then it can wrestle magnetic polarity control. Just imagine these planets are magnets, like the Earth is a magnet, you know, surrounded by a magnetic field. And the sun is a gigantic magnet, and it's controlling the smaller magnets that are going around it. So this other star, the secondary star, it can come in and it can affect the polarity. It can take magnetic polarity control of our planet if it gets close enough. Depends on mass ratio. So if it's bigger than the sun, you know, it wouldn't be likely that it's bigger, but it's a proportion thing. And then when you look at the proportion of the magnetic polarity strength versus the sun, then that's how close it has to get. And relative to the plane, you know, if it's below the plane, then it has to be more powerful. If it's above, if it's right on the plane, then it's a straight one-to-one matchup for this guy. It's like an arm wrestling contest. So whenever the star comes between the sun and the earth, that's whenever we have the 90-degree variety geological pole shift. But it's not going to be able to do it to Jupiter at the same time. Jupiter's going to be on the far side of the sun. Whenever you have two planets that are conjoined, which means that they're side by side, you know, whenever the Earth comes between the sun and Jupiter, for example. So if the star came in between the Earth and Jupiter, it's possible, if it has enough magnetic polarity control, to wrestle from the sun. But when you have a tripod position of those planets, then it's impossible for that star to be in three places at one time. It would have to be able to reach through the sun. So it sounds to me like that. It sounds like fiction. I hate to say, but it sounds like fiction.
Yeah, well, one thing is that Jupiter and Saturn are so much larger, so, the dark star wouldn't have to go right by them. I mean, because they got mass, too. They got a lot of pull. So,
And right now, they're kind of far away from each other.
Right, I know. But even if just one did a pole flip, that's significant, pretty much.
It's similar to the story of McCanny. He was talking about Neptune and Uranus and how they were affected by the inbound star. That's on Harrington's plot. That's on his graph. He has a black star coming in, or whatever his object is. I think they're calling it Planet X. He has it coming in from Sagittarius. 1993, then Neptune and Uranus were conjoined. They were out there, you know, in a straight line. But they're so far apart. The distance between those two planets is the same as the sun to Saturn. So really you have to get between the sun and the planet that you're going to turn around. You have to get between them. And for it to affect one, I can see it affecting the inside planet, Neptune. I can see it if it was inside of the sun. But be able to reach across there and wrestle magnetic polarity control away from the sun, that's going to be pretty difficult. If it's on the outside coming in, then he wasn't talking about a pole flip. He was talking about just being perturbed. As he said that they dipped down. Because they were conjoined, that's really impossible. The reason is because the outer planet, Uranus, that would be affected first as the black star or whatever it is was coming in. And the Neptune was going to be 10 astronomical units away. That's a long way to cause a dip in the orbit. So the way he was telling the story is as if they were right next to each other just because they were conjoined, but they're really far, far, far apart. So that's another story that sounded like fiction to me also. But they would have said that one on the pole shift thingy you were talking about, whenever they're in tripod position, if one of those planets would have flipped around, then I could see that. If it was an amateur, I've seen this happen. Some people don't realize whenever Saturn comes over the horizon in the east, well, by the time it gets to the west, it's flipped over, you know, because we're looking at it upside down from where we were looking at it on the east. So if people aren't aware, you know, it goes in the category of people, they're looking in their environment more. They really don't have anything to compare it to. So they look out there, they think they see something strange. They go, hey, look, you know, like all the double sun pictures. Solar flares, even Marshall Masters, I think he's fooled by that, his object of interest, what do they call it, Blue Bonnet or whatever they're calling it. I think he's fooled by that. It's easy to be fooled whenever you're not used to looking out there all the time and you haven't looked at hundreds and hundreds of pictures. And so that's a lot of the stories that are coming in that I think people are just being fooled. But I'm not sure about the source on the tripod on Jupiter, Saturn, and was it Uranus or Neptune, one of those?
Neptune.
Yeah, Neptune. Not sure where that source is, who actually said that.
Well, regardless, Terrell, what we need to do is have people out there with telescopes confirm this for us with pictures. That's about all we can do.
That's the same as Blue Bonnet with Marshall Masters. If there was really an object that bright that could – I mean, this thing was brilliantly bright right through the outgassing of the volcano and right through the clouds, beautiful bright. If it was that bright, he would have had confirmation instantly. There's too many people that are looking, all kinds of countries. So that's definitely a lens anomaly, in my opinion.
Terrell's breaking up a lot.
Yeah, well, we can definitely tell you, Terrell, that you're back in the Ozarks because you've been skipping quite a bit with Skype. But you're still understandable, but you just did skip out for about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
I've got enough friends with telescopes. Is it better if I talk? I'm going to go with revolutionary, and I'll try to talk slower. So on a little bit of an update, then I'm here in the Ozarks because my two primary models. I don't feel like that.
You're kind of skipping out, Terrell. That's about 20 seconds now.
Yeah, we're losing him a lot.
Terrell. Boom. Let's see. Well, can you hear me, Sheldon, right now?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
So probably just the problem is on Terrell's end. So, Terrell, if you can hear us, call back in. Or maybe let me do it this way. Maybe if I call you, maybe if I pull you in the other way, it might work.
Well, you know he's near all them caves. There's probably a lot of signals bouncing around there.
Well, the Ozarks is just Missouri, the Ozarks, Arkansas. It's all really bad stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
They think they've done it. It's on purpose.
Yeah, I've even talked to John Moore privately, and he lives in the southeast corner of Missouri on a cell phone. It's just he has horrible reception out there.
So I've tried to add him to group. Well, Terrell, I tried to add you. Maybe hang up and... okay, now I'll try to call Terrell back. And let's see how that works. Well, he cashed out of Skype.
So yeah, it shows his offline status.
Yeah, there's nothing I can do. So, Sheldon, where's your head at as far as... Now, you know Terrell's theory. It's like right on the doorstep. He's in the Ozarks. He's taking up his position. He really is in the Ozarks. You can tell by his Skype quality. Same crap. But what's your theory? What's your timeline and glide path? I mean, what's the biggest theory that you're under?
Well, the Earth crossing event with the black star may really occur tomorrow, but me and John DiNardo, we don't think this will just happen in like one day. This happens very gradually. It could happen a few days after the 17th. It could happen like a week from now, but as far as when everything's going to start going to hell, I know that according to John Moore's sources, the continuity of government contingency planning had until the last day in 2009 to finalize their preparations with their underground shelters. So, and they're just going to continue preparing until the very last moment. So it seems like this event is way overdue already.
Excuse me. You know, the one thing that I'm not getting, though, is that I look for a couple of tripwires, and one is the nuclear power plants. Nobody can convince me that these people are willing to go underneath the ground for hundreds and hundreds of years as the Earth is just irradiated. And just, you know, all life basically dies from radiation. And so I'm looking at the nuclear power plants, and I look today to find out, because I've been seeing so many of them being shut down, if somebody can find a map or the number of nuclear power plants shut down versus how many it's open. So I'm looking for them having an excuse or a reason to start shutting the nuclear power plants down. They have in Russia. They have in Germany. France is working on it. Supposedly it's a head fake, but they're supposed to be putting one in China and India. I don't believe it. But, you know, so if somebody can find out how many nuclear power plants are shut down in the U.S.
Well, that's a great point to bring up, another sign for us to be watching out for. You know, there's so many subtle events as this object gets closer. We got train derailments, sinkholes, and water main breaks, gas main breaks. Well, them shutting down the nuclear reactors would be another great sign to watch out for. And after this stuff's all done, yeah, the it's going to be a disaster with all these nuclear reactors melting down if they don't shut them down.
Yeah, exactly. Also, that there's a new huge sinkhole. They want to say it was caused by water, but the aquifer in California, I mean, they're almost down to water rationing. They want to say on the top of this hill that this whole neighborhood collapsing.
Oh, that was in Lockport, I think.
Something like that, yeah. But somebody says that a volcano is opening up. That's really what's going on.
Well, yeah, I heard Cliff High and Sean Morton doing a show together, and they were saying that because of Mount Popo down in by Mexico City going off, it somehow can be causing that to happen in Western California there.
Yeah, and so we are getting this incredible amount of sinkholes. But, you know, I watch the government, and I'm just watching what they're doing, and, you know, and so what you and your friend, what's his name again?
John DiNardo. Yeah, he's like the closest Planet X researcher friend I have, yeah.
Uh-huh. And so, what's your theory? Where do you think it's at?
Where do I think what's at?
Where do you think it's a black dwarf star, a brown dwarf, a planet?
I really tend to think it's a brown dwarf star. Me and Terrell, we disagree on a lot of things, but I still maintain that's probably what it is.
And where do you place, where do you think yours is at?
Well, my friend John DiNardo, he tends to think it's making a giant U-turn out there somewhere by Saturn. I don't really know. I think it's somewhere on the near the outer fringes of the solar system. I personally think, but you know, even if it's out on the outer fringes of our solar system, it could still be causing these massive events on Jupiter and Saturn, I would think.
Well, if it's that far out, how would it have that effect? Do you think it's that big?
Well, it's supposed to be bigger than Jupiter.
Uh-huh. And, of course, density, too. It could be, could actually have more density than the sun, too. I remember in 12th grade astronomy class or whatever, this teacher held up a teaspoon. And he goes, one teaspoon of this particular type of planet or whatever could have... weigh as much as 100 tons. So I guess that kind of stuff is possible.
Yeah, you know, my friend John DiNardo, he explains that stuff so eloquently. If I recall, he says that this object is conservatively estimated to be at least 1,000 Earth masses.
Uh-huh. What would make it do a U-turn, though?
Well, because the orbital path of this thing is, hyperbolic or parabolic. So it has a curve on, you know, the one end of its orbital path, and if we're getting close to it, performing its perihelion maneuver around the sun, well, then it should be getting ready to do the U-turn. Yeah, I think.
I thought it would only do a U-turn around. the sun, like a slingshot, the sun would grab it. And okay, well, hang on, Sheldon. We're going to be right back in just 2 minutes, and I'll try to get a hold of Terrell again.
Okay.
Well, welcome back, folks. You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We are listener supported. Keep that in mind. Looks like I lost my man Terrell. He's in the Ozarks now, so he made it there along with the crappy internet that they get down there. With me on the line is Sheldon Day. Sheldon, you got a website, and you're pretty heavily into Planet X. And John DiNardo, you ought to try to get him to come on Thursday, Sheldon.
Yeah, it'd be pretty late for him. I've already talked to him about it. I could ask him again, though.
Yeah. Yours is your website is The Light of Day.
Yeah, the Light of Day Radio Show.com.
Oh, okay. The Light of Day Radio Show.com.
Correct. And there's a Planet X logo on the top of my homepage if you folks want to click on that, it'll take you to another page where I have tons of interviews that John DiNardo has done on Planet X and stuff by John Moore and Gilbert Erickson and Lucas. And I also have these specially created Planet X audio drama series at the very, very bottom of that page. It has various talk show hosts and researchers attesting to the reality of Planet X, and it has beautiful background music in them.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, no, I've been to your website. You got a neat one, that's for sure.
And, oh, thanks.
Yeah, heavy on Planet X stuff. So what is your time frame, Sheldon? I mean, are you with Terrell that it's crossing right now? It's crossing orbit?
I don't have access to the telescopes NASA does, unfortunately, so I'm just waiting it out and just always waiting to see what happens. You know, we got Courtney Brown and Cliff High. They say anywhere between now and the end of the month, we're going to witness this global coastal flooding event. And they're, I just listened to Cliff's recent one, and he's still maintains that this is going to happen.
Yeah, and a big quake on the Pacific where it knocks out bridges for 1,000 miles. Now, was Cliff on Sean's show today?
No, it was just an independent audio thing Cliff made last weekend. He puts it up on YouTube. He said that was going to be his very last edition.
Yeah, it's the Webbot project, right?
Yeah, he's with the Webbot project, yeah.
Right, I don't know how I missed that one. I'm subscribed into him. So, so what are you doing, Sheldon? I mean, are you a prepper? Have you, or are you off? You're off the coast, of course. If you're in Arizona,
I tend to think for the most part, I'm pretty safe in this area here in southern Arizona. I'm more than a tank full of gas away from the West Coast, so I might not have to worry too much about climate refugees. And we're about 2,400 feet above sea level here. But then again, I don't think there is no such thing as a safe zone map, because if you got space rocks coming in at 50,000, 100,000 miles an hour, or, you know, the sun's getting ready to scorch half the planet, I really don't think there is a safe place to be.
Yeah. No, I see what you mean on that. No, it's going to be all... You know, you can do certain things to get ready and to prep for it and have water and firearms and stuff like that. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it's really going to be an act of God who lives and who dies. So, you know, just purely from a physical, mental, emotional standpoint, you know, I don't think because, you know, my family really hasn't. They haven't fully grasped it. So I give my chance 50-50. But who knows? You know, with God's all things is possible. You know, so you don't know where things are going to shake out. Some things you can say pretty sure you're not going to make it. Like if you're in South L.A., you're not going to make it. But that one's an easy one. But... And so what's your worldview, Sheldon, as far as Planet X? Do you believe in Wormwood? Do you come from a Christian worldview? Where do you line up on that?
It's sort of interesting. As heavily as I am into this topic, most of the other Planet X researchers out there are Bible thumpers, and they're always, you know, citing stuff from the Bible. I never came at it that way. I just listening to John Moore's show on Republic Network back in late 2009, and he's the man that really woke me up to this reality, and just been researching it heavily ever since. And it's just, I'm just so obsessed with researching it. It's like I have a mission to, you know, maybe one of God's emissaries to help alert humanity that this event will indeed happen.
Oh yeah, no, it's. I am fully convinced. I mean, I'm 100% in. There's no way that the world can be constructed like it is, and we have the history we have, and 22 ancient civilizations all talk about it, and there's so much writing, so much evidence, both in the archaeology and
Right, there's too much anecdotal evidence aside from the Bible. I mean, with the way the governments of the world have been acting so bizarre, and why the elites have to tunnel into the earth like they are, unless they're trying to escape something that they know is coming, and there's just too many other signs of anecdotal evidence that this is true.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, why people can't see it, and why they just want to think it's, you know, pie in the sky type stuff, I don't get it. I don't get it. Yeah, whatever. Well, you want me to try to knock out? You try to knock out the rest of the interview? There's like about 7 minutes left or so.
Yeah, actually, there's another chick over in Reno that wants me to come on her show. I think I'll go over there. Hopefully, Terrell will come back on. It still shows him offline, though.
Yeah, I tried to get him back a couple times. He's not coming back. Yeah, make sure, you know, every Thursday, show up, Sheldon, and bring along anybody else. Terrell's trying to get a hold of a big panel, and, you know, it's, but you are right. Do you realize that if we go into June, and right around June 7th, 10th, you realize, Cliff High, Courtney Brown, the remote viewers, Terrell, Sean David Morton's Uranus Square or whatever that is, Pluto Square, you know, all these people, they got all these dates stacked up here right at the end of May. And if nothing happens, we got a pretty clear deck, don't we?
If nothing happens, I suspect that what they're doing is they're intentionally putting out dates ahead of this event because they want people to just give up on it, so they won't get prepared enough. I think that's what may be going on if nothing happens.
Well, Common Ellen did that. That was a perfect psyop. Have you ever seen something so beautiful?
Yeah, that was a pretty good psyop. I agree.
Wow, 90%. You had everybody right there on it, and then when it didn't happen, 90%. It was only the most hardcore that stuck in there. But 90% of them, you can't even say that word to them now. You can't say anything about planning that. I heard that before. Their mind just, boom, shuts right down. You're right about that.
Yeah, I think that's what the December 21st date had a lot to do with the end of last year is, you know, a lot of people did tie that in with Planet X passing, and now people just, that would make people give up because nothing happened.
Yeah, speaking of which, it looks like Terrell... we got Terrell back.
Yeah, he's back on.
Okay, Terrell. Yeah, you
test
sound good.
Test my mic first. Okay, I'm going to talk slowly. I might be bottlenecking the thing or something. It said it. My signal strength was excellent, and my system couldn't see it or something. I rebooted twice. It took the second time, and now it seems to be okay. So I didn't hear what you said. You guys said previously to be able to speak on your topic, but what I was doing earlier was like. I got stuff scattered everywhere in my safe zone location, but I wanted to give a report. I went as fast as I could. My feet are, I'm shoddy from, it's been driving from dark to dark, and so I'm not 100%, but I'm here. So, the reason that I'm here is because my top two models suggest that we have not experienced the trough event yet. The trough event, that would be whenever our Earth passes between two stars, and this other star is getting closer. And for example, that's where the 188-day cycle comes from. Add 11 days each year. You do that to Chile, 2010, February 27th. You get Fukushima, and then you get Guerrero. And I expected an event on April the 2nd, and well, some people think it happened on April the 2nd with the Iceland event. They had 484 earthquakes in 2 days. Was that the date? Or is I see Stu's here now. Stu believes that it's April the 6th that we had the trough event. And there are other dates. And whenever you're having sevens and eights kind of regularly, then it's hard to tell. And it could be that Chile, the Harper rays were set up in the around the perimeter, and Guerrero, they were set up, and Fukushima, they were set up. So it could be that I'm looking for a more powerful event, when actually it's not supposed to be as powerful. It could be that Stu's right. And so it, I'm looking for the I'm using the Earth. As the Earth goes around the sun, we're racing 1.6 million miles each day when we don't have my event. And it, whenever we get to the left side of Pisces, that means we're going to cross the orbit path. That's today. That's the 17th. Now it's that's today here on the East Coast. And so I want to be up here in case we have the event. If we have the event when we cross its orbit path, that means it crosses our orbit path at the same time we cross its orbit path. That's a crossing event. And that we can have a 180-degree variety pole shift. That's very, very serious. And with the remote viewer seeing some kind of event like that, the web bot seeing some kind of event like that, then there's enough people that are looking at the middle of May, and my date is May the 17th. That's why I'm here. And so I treat the threat like it's real. Now, I'm a survivalist. I was a survivalist before I started this project. Since I started with the H1N1 thingy that happened 2009. And so I like the war game. And this is my war game exercise, meeting my group up here and going through the drill. And if it doesn't, it turns out not to be anything, that's great. That's what I'm hoping that happens. I hope Stu's right, that April the 6th is the date that we pass through the trough. And that means we only had 4 days to the 188-day cycle, which means we have another orbit cycle in us. That would mean we'd have an event. It's going to be October around the 10th. And what you do is you add 6 months and 6 days to that. And when if I get a big event like the Aleutian Island event or Fiji, that was the year before, Christchurch the year before that, then that tells me that that model's right. And then I can build a predictive model that's going to tell me when the next event's going to happen on the near side. So that's good. So I'm up here doing war gaming and hoping that nothing happens. And there was another point that I was going to make. With that, and it is escaping me.
Find out from Stu. Think about it for a second, Terrell. Stu, why do you think that we had the 188-day cycle event on April the 6th? What's your grounds?
Okay, I'll get to that just in a minute, but
okay, just so you know,
when will it be confirmed? When will it be confirmed that I'm right about April the 6th, Terrell? Is it going to be today if nothing happens with a massive earthquake or further down the timeline?
No, you have to have a seismic pattern. That's, for example, we had on the near side, whenever we had on February 27th, 2010, the Chile event, then we had Christchurch on the 188-day cycle on the backside. So whenever you stop the orbit diagrams, we draw a line out there and it tells us where this guy is. Then 188 days goes around, then we had Fukushima, and that points to the left side of Leo. Then we go 188 days, and then we have Fiji on February 15th, 2012. So you see how it goes around? And so I'm pointing a line. Now I'm expecting the 188-day cycle is going to end, and we're going to have to add days to it because that's when it reaches perihelion. It's coming in, and it's closer. It's moving faster. It moves around in the orbit diagram. Right. So how many days do we add? I don't.
So you did say April the 2nd, 2013, was going to be the day. Now it didn't happen on that day. My thoughts are this. So to answer your question, Hijack, here it goes. On the 6th of April 2013, we had the crossing event, similar to the situations we've had with the result of a massive earthquake in Papua, the Indonesian side of Papua New Guinea. Right. On the 6th of April, we had an 8.0 earthquake rocking a sparsely populated area of Papua. Now, where I get this information from is this. USGS are putting out propaganda. They're downgrading all earthquakes. We have to understand that. They're downgrading everything. What I did is I went to the seismic server. Right now, these seismic servers are set up in different areas around the world. The seismic server closest to the impact on the 6th of April in Papua, which is the Indonesian side of Papua New Guinea, showed an 8.0. Now, in the newsletter coming up, there is evidence to prove that I'm right. I'm showing the actual data coming off the seismic servers, right? So it was an 8.0 from the Port Moresby seismic server at the moment of impact showed an 8.0. What happened then was USGS got hold of it, and because of their twisted way of doing things, they downgraded it. Now, all of April, we had four earthquakes, four of them, at 8.0 in Papua New Guinea. And I'll just get to the end of this little report.
8.2 in Iran.
Yep, 8.2 in Iran. And that happened on the 16th of April. There was an 8.2 in the Kuril Islands. That's directly opposite Alaska. There's a whole bunch of volcanoes near. I went to the seismic servers, and it showed an 8.2 on the 19th of April. Then again, on the 20th of April, we had an 8.0 in China. So starting on the 6th, we had an 8.0. On the 16th, we had an 8.2. On the 19th, we had an 8.2. And on the 20th, we had an 8.0. And all this makes me feel as though from the 6th of April, we had our event, and then a series of things happened afterwards, and that's where I'm coming from, because I can prove this by the mass animal deaths that we had leading up to the event. There was dolphins, pelicans, there was all sorts of different birds falling out of the sky in different areas of the world. We had mass animal strandings. I'm showing this in the report in the newsletter this week coming too. I'm also looking at the buoy data. And now I was watching at the time leading up to it. And what was happening was that the buoys were actually lifting up and down, which I feel as though the crust of the earth under the ocean from a southern declination in the southern hemisphere was lifting up and down. We also had a series of things along the Antarctic plate where it hit the Indian Ocean, where it hit the Pacific Ocean, and where it hit the Scoria plate, that there was a series of 5.0 to 6.0 earthquakes. So all these things were building up to the event that happened on the 6th of April.
You know, Stu, you might be onto something, because that was 4.8s during the month of April. And just like the Guerrero event, you have a pair of 8s in Mexico, but you also, a week before that, had an 8 in Greenland, of all places. And then you had a 7.9 in the Aleutian Islands a few days after that date.
Well, bear in mind, guys, those numbers are actually one full number value higher. An 8.2 really means a 9.2.
No, I don't believe that that's – well, I mean, yeah. It all depends what you're going to say next, though, Sheldon, because
– Well, yeah, if you're talking Richter scale versus magnitude scale, yeah.
Mm.
Sheldon's right.
Yeah, if you want to talk it like that. But, I mean, we have to have some sort of consistency somewhere, and there's a graph that's out there, and it's showing a type at this moment in time and at this particular point of impact. And that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, Terrell, so let's say Stu's right. What does that mean? If April 6th was the actual date, then you go 188 days.
Well, this thing's further out. This is my feeling.
I think you might be right. This thing ain't done. This thing is still coming in. We got Terrell, we need another date.
No, I have the models. Stu and I talk a lot. Can you guys hear me?
Good. Yeah, you're good.
Or not.
Okay, I know you're good.
Yeah, we can hear you. We can hear you very
well. I've got the models running. And Stu's, he's number four, I think. But I've got six going, and you could build 100 of them. This is the problem. You didn't even mention the gigantic event. It was April the 11th of no, it was April we're having so many big events. That's the problem. This was easy when I started. You didn't have any eights. You had a threes, fours, and fives, and a six every now and then. Six was my odd quake. Then it got to be sevens. Now it's eights. And it's hard to tell which one is my event. When we had Fukushima and then just a bunch of sixes, it was easy. But now this is getting hard. When the Guerrero turned out to be a pair of eights, and now we're getting eights all the time. So you have to, you can't, if you don't know, you have to build more models. And I could build a bunch of them.
What I don't understand is...
I hate to use hindsight to warn people.
What I don't understand is, how come you've got six models running now? I mean, before the 188-day cycle, you said that that was happening, and now you've got six. Why of a sudden, all of a sudden, have you got six going? I don't quite understand that.
Rick, why don't you go ahead and mute?
Because I work with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like you, and you've got an April, you've got an April 6th date, and some people think April the 2nd is right because of the 484 quakes in Iceland. So for each person, then they've got a good view. And so then I start looking at magnetics. With the you know, whenever the seismic pattern is going up, 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 or down, 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 that's a sign of the magnetic portal connection, stretching or shortening. So then it supports one over another one. You guys move up and down based on these other data that's coming in. So if there's a backside alignment that coincides with your April the 6th event, then you're going to go up a notch. But the bigger question was, what does it mean if Stu's right? It means there's another orbit cycle. We've got another orbit cycle in us. That means we added 4 days to the cycle. That means next time we'll probably add 4, 8, or 16, depending on its velocity, how fast it's picking up speed. And the number of days we add is going to tell us how close it is. If he turns out to be right.
And that also means, Terrell, oh, by the way, everybody in chat, they say you owe them another hour because you were late. And they all want you to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. So they want to hold you over, Terrell.
Well, it depends on what Nighthawk says.
Well, no, they give me the go-ahead. It says, go ahead and do it, Hijacker. He owes us.
Well, I can hang around for a while. I'm still sitting around my mess here, but
all right. Well, hang around.
You guys can hear me. I don't mind if I'm breaking up and stuff. Then
no, you're coming in.
Waste
good.
You guys'
yeah.
time.
Hang around as long as you can. But the point is, Stu actually has figured this one out. To have 4 8s, that close together in a month, then I know
well,
for. Go ahead.
What we're talking about is not a crossing event. It's an alignment event. This
right.
is whenever the Earth passes between the two stars, and it's a trough thing. So there's a gravity well, and there's a gravity well where they intersect. It's a trough. The Earth
right.
passes through it, and it goes bumpity bump. But the it looks like to me, I'm looking at varying data, and I'm wondering why. If the trough's getting deeper as the stars are getting closer, we should see larger and larger and larger events, which we saw with Chile and Fukushima, but then... Why was Guerrero a dud?
Yeah, but don't you think if this thing is further out that we're going to have a slow build-up? I mean, Bob Dean from a Project Camelot interview had mentioned this, that we're going to have a slow build-up of events happening, exactly what we've had. We've had very strange weather. You know, like we've talked about it before, snow in the Sahara Desert. We've got very strange weather pattern happening, lots of different strange earthquakes. And we had 4.5 in Toulon, which is the French region.
Well,
we're having earthquakes in the Pyrenees. I mean, all these things are significant. I still think that it's further out there.
Hey, Terrell?
I'm tired. I'm not going to be able to hold my thought if I can't finish it.
Okay, sorry.
The problem is that Scripture says that they're going to say peace and safety and destruction comes upon them suddenly. The Underground Ark City program that run by the Rothschilds is not going to work if you have all these signs, if everybody can put it together. This thing is mysterious that's coming from space. The point I was going to make earlier is that as these two stars are coming together, I think what we're getting is a Doppler effect. In other words, you're getting a compression, a compaction of the waves. There's a lot more going on between these stars. There's a dynamic relationship between these two stars, and it's like a train coming towards you. Notice how the sound waves are compressing as they're coming towards you, and as it goes away, they're stretching. I got a feeling this is what's happening, and this gravity trough, I think, is pulsating. So whenever the Earth goes passing through it at 66,000 miles per hour, then if we hit a wide section of that pulse, you know, it's pulsating wide and thin, and if it depends on where we pass through that thing. So I think that's why we're getting a different effect.
Yeah,
it's because
exactly.
of the thinness and
the feet's happening in April.
So when this thing comes around and then leaves, it's going to be the opposite. So that as the two stars are getting further apart, going further apart, then instead the Earth changes are going to be less intense as they are as the thing is coming in. So the Earth can come around in orbit and hit the thin section. I think the thin part of the trough is deeper, and the wider section is shallower. So whenever the Earth comes through, I can see how you're going to get a pair of eights like Guerrero. If we go through a shallow section of the trough, it's going to be more of a bumpity bump, where it's just going to be bump when you hit that thin section, and you're going to get a bigger effect. I got a feeling that, in other words, that's just one of my theories. It seems to fit the data. So that's what I do, is I look at all the evidence and then try to figure it out.
Hey, you know, Terrell?
What's causing this? Yes, sir.
Quick question, Terrell. These massive X-class solar flares, do you know what the directionality was of these flares? What constellation are they going out into when they happen?
They actually support model number 6, I hate to tell you. They were on the... Oh, we're getting ready to go. I hear the music.
Yeah, we're coming up to a break. We're going to roll over. We're going to stay on topic. We got Terrell here, Stu.
Save that question. Let's ask it again right,
right
after the break.
Yeah, and if you've got any questions you want to call in... call in, but we'll be right back. Maybe that wasn't the music. Did somebody hear the music?
Yeah, the music's going.
Oh, okay.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Is your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? In survival, in gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter, are your banking records safe?